95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Good morning and welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. Today's guest is a fertility doctor helping her patients build their families. Dr. Ann Hutchinson has been passionate about women's health and the reproductive endocrinology since the start of her career. After earning her medical degree at Thomas Jefferson University, she took her expertise to New York and Chicago. Dr. Hutchinson has since brought her career as a medical professional full circle by returning to Philadelphia as a Shady Grove fertility physician at the Center City office. She's joining me today to share her story. Hi, Dr. Hutchinson.
Hi, good morning. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So you're not from Philadelphia. You came here for medical school?
I did. I'm kind of from all over the place. I was born in Pittsburgh. I grew up in Tampa, Florida. And then from college onwards, really, I've kind of been like around the Northeast and then Chicago for fellowship and back to Philly. So we bounce around a little bit, but Philly's home.
So talk about your career path and what you did after you earned your degree at Thomas Jefferson University, where you went from there.
So I did medical school at Thomas Jefferson University and kind of got my first taste of women's health in medical school. It wasn't, honestly, OBGYN was not what I really thought that I was going to go into when I went to medical school, but it won me over. I got to spend time in some of the local hospitals around here, and I loved it. Specifically, I got my first exposures to kind of fertility medicine, and it really kind of like lit my fire. So I did my residency at Cornell in Manhattan on the Upper East Side. And so I spent 4 years there training as a general OBGYN. And then from there, again, I always knew that I wanted to do fertility, and I kind of kept active within that subspecialty throughout residency too. But the way that training is kind of organized is you do 4 years of residency to be a generalist, and then you kind of go on to subspecialty training. So I then applied to fellowship programs. I was at Northwestern in Chicago for an additional 3 years of fertility medicine training in reproductive endocrinology and infertility. And then I finished up that training last year and was lucky enough to join Shady Grove and come back to where my family really wanted to be.
So what exactly sparked your interest in women's health?
Well, women's health generally, it is such a cool patient population. So there is no other aspect of medicine where you get to generally work with kind of like a young, healthy patient population. And I think that, I mean, as a woman who was kind of like learning about like the medical aspects of like my own physiology, my own anatomy as I was going through it, it was incredibly interesting. So, and I think there's such a broad spectrum of different subspecialties that you can do off of like OBGYN generally. You can work specifically with folks who are pregnant. You can do deliveries. You can work in the fertility world. You can work in the oncology world and treat gynecologic cancers. You can be a surgeon. So I think just the kind of wide array of options that were available was definitely one of the things that drew me in. And then I became particularly interested in the fertility world after I had exposure to that, and just the huge impact that you're able to make on families' lives. And that's kind of what brought me to where I am.
So let's talk about fertility. Is there a way that women can know or have any indication that they may have some fertility issues before they even start to try to have a family?
So yes, there are definitely some red flags that I would say it's worth talking to someone sooner rather than later. I think one of the things that I talk to my patients about so much is focusing on what your cycle looks like, what your period is, how often it comes, because that's really kind of one of the vital signs. If you get a regular cycle every month, that at least gives a really good indication that you're releasing an egg every month, that you have a chance to get pregnant each month. If you're not having regular cycles, if you're one of those folks that can go 2, 3, 4 months without getting a period, then you may not be releasing an egg every month, which can make it really difficult because obviously an egg is very important in trying to get pregnant. So there are pretty straightforward tests that we can do to try to figure out why that might be the case and help work around and at least bring you back to a baseline level of fertility. Other than that, the only way to know whether or not you're fertile is to try to get pregnant. So it's really tough to offer tests to somebody to determine whether or not they're fertile. It's really just a question of if you're trying to get pregnant, it's not working out, that's the right time to kind of come in. We can do some tests and figure out whether or not there's anything that we can be addressing.
Okay, so you talk about women dropping an egg each month and having a regular period. What about birth control, and specifically birth controls that eliminate your period? Is that affecting fertility?
Not long term. Different kinds of birth control work in different ways to try to stop pregnancy. Some of them work by trying to stop ovulation. So birth control pills are probably the most common one that works that way. And what birth control pills do is they just kind of temporarily shut down the communication between the brain and the ovary that goes on in the beginning of a normal menstrual cycle to try to recruit one of those eggs to grow and get ready to ovulate. So it really just hits the pause button on that. It kind of suppresses that messaging coming from the brain with the hormones that are in the birth control pill. As soon as you come off that birth control pill, that cycling is going to resume. Sometimes it can take 1 to 3 months for that communication cycle to really get back into sync and get normal cycles back again. But everything is completely reversible.
Are there things that women should avoid? Mm-hmm. You know, things they should be eating or shouldn't be eating? Anything natural that they should do to try to help with fertility later on in life?
I wish there was a better answer for this, because so many women, so many of my patients really want there to be something that they can control in this process. And the answer is there really isn't. I mean, I think that maintaining a healthy lifestyle as much as you can is going to be important for fertility as well as kind of the rest of like your global health picture. So regular exercise, a balanced diet, a healthy weight, all of those things are really important, but there is no one thing that's going to help improve or maximize fertility moving forward in terms of like egg quality or quantity or anything like that. I think the biggest thing that I tell my patients, the one thing that we really know can cause harm, is smoking. So I think that if you're somebody who smokes cigarettes and fertility is something that's important to you in the future, then that is really just one of the many reasons to think about stopping, because some of those changes can be reversible once people quit, but we know it can have a big impact on egg quality and egg quantity and make fertility much more difficult to accomplish.
So like you said, I know people want to find the reason. Are there top reasons for fertility issues, or is it sort of just what comes with the woman?
Absolutely. So,
or I shouldn't even say the woman. I guess it could be the man, too.
It can, and a third of the time it is. So a third of the time we see some kind of sperm-related issue or some kind of male factor in fertility, and that's a really important thing to keep in mind, because I know that women in society and personally tend to bear a lot of the responsibility for fertility and fertility-related issues, and honestly, that's just really not the case in a pretty decent percentage of the time. But some of the most common reasons we see, if somebody isn't ovulating regularly, anovulation or irregular cycles is a really common reason for infertility to happen. That'll happen to people with PCOS. Sometimes can happen to people who do really intense exercise and their periods will stop for that reason. We see male factor infertility or issues with sperm production or sperm release. We see issues with fallopian tubes, people who have a history of surgery inside their belly or endometriosis or things like that that could cause scar tissue or damage to fallopian tubes can lead to infertility. I think the most common one that we see that gives people issue with trying to get pregnant, it's just the age. And we know that that's just something about female physiology that is probably not talked about enough, is the impact of age on egg quality and fertility down the line and what we can and can't do to help.
So lay out the age.
So when we talk about age, we really talk about the quality of that egg or the likelihood of any given egg within their ovary of being able to turn into a baby. And when we talk about that, we're talking about the number of chromosomes inside of the egg. So people generally are made up of 46 chromosomes. We get 23 from sperm, 23 from egg. They meet to make a 46-chromosome person. Sperm men continue to make throughout their entire lives, and it almost always has 23 chromosomes in it. Women, that's not the case. Women are born with all the eggs that they're ever going to have. We do not make any new eggs throughout the course of our lifetime. Those eggs age with us. And to make matters even more complicated, each of those eggs has 46 chromosomes inside of it, so twice the number that it's supposed to. And it's not until the moment that that egg ovulates that it has to kick out half of its chromosomes and it has to do it perfectly. And there are an infinite number of ways that it can do it wrong, and there's only one way it can do it perfectly. And the likelihood of that process working really has to do with your age at the time that you ovulate, because those eggs have aged with us. And the older we are, the more likely there is to be a mistake in that process, and that egg that's released just really never to have a chance from the beginning of turning into a baby. The statistics that I think about, so human reproduction is really inefficient. And even when we're in our 20s, it still makes mistakes. So probably once or twice a year, even a young woman who's 25 and trying to get pregnant is going to release an abnormal egg. And even if that egg meets sperm at the perfect place at the perfect time, depending on what the mistake in the chromosomes of that egg is, at some point in development, when those mistaken ingredients are called on as the next step in embryo development, that development's going to shut down. So sometimes that happens before implantation, so you would just get a negative pregnancy test that month. Or if it's a smaller mistake that's kind of evaded detection, it can implant and even start to grow, and that's really what leads to a majority of miscarriages. So at 25, we think that probably 9 out of every 10 eggs will be normal. By 35, it's about 6 or 7 out of every 10 would be normal. At 37 or 38, you're probably nearing that 50-50 threshold. And by 40, only 1 out of every 10 eggs is expected to be normal. So even though a 40-year-old woman may be ovulating every month and have a chance every month an egg is released, there's only a 10% chance that even if everything is perfect, that it even has the possibility of turning into a baby. And that's really why fertility becomes more difficult to achieve in your late 30s and early 40s and why miscarriages become more common. So what we do in our world is we try to get access to more eggs to use quantity to help overcome that quality issue.
But I feel like, though, in today's world, we're seeing a lot of women who are having babies older.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, so if you think about it, at 40 is probably 1 out of every 10, and then it's even a steeper decline. So at 41 is maybe 1 out of every 20, at 42, 1 out of every 30. There's a chance that a really lucky 42-year-old happens to ovulate a good egg one month, it meets a sperm, and it turns into a baby. But in all likelihood, especially kind of as women get into their 40s, fertility treatment is oftentimes the answer because it helps us be more efficient at looking for that right egg. And I would say a majority of pregnancies that are achieved kind of at least into your 40s probably use some kind of fertility medicine to help achieve it, or that individual has just gotten very lucky and had the right egg at the right time. Another thing that has been starting to happen more in our field, or I guess two things, one is egg freezing. So young women may come through, or women who are in their 30s come through, decide to freeze eggs if they're not ready to have kids at that moment or don't see themselves as ready to have kids until, you know, potentially they get into their 40s. And we can then use their eggs from, you know, if they froze their eggs at 35, those eggs would have the statistics of a 35-year-old and the fertility of a 35-year-old, even if they use them at 45. And then also additionally is donor egg, which I think is something that people don't talk about nearly enough, but is a really common treatment option that we use where there is essentially an anonymous donor, a young woman who goes through the IVF process and makes her eggs available for women who aren't able to achieve pregnancy with their own eggs to be able to use their partner's sperm to make an embryo. It's placed inside her uterus. She may carry that pregnancy and have that baby.
I've heard that it's better to freeze the embryo than it is to freeze the egg.
It's kind of comparing apples and oranges a little bit. So I think there are different reasons why you would do those two things. So if I have like a 35-year-old woman come to me, she is partnered, she is maybe married to somebody that she feels very confident that this is going to be the person that she decides to raise children with, they're just not ready to do it yet. In that situation, maybe freezing embryos does make sense. And we can kind of talk about what the trade-off with that is. But if I have a young woman at 35 who comes in, she's unpartnered, she doesn't know what sperm source she wants to use, but she's confident she wants to have kids with maybe somebody she meets later in life, you don't really have an option of making embryos. Because to make an embryo, that's fertilizing the egg and growing it out. The tricky thing about freezing eggs is an egg is a single cell. An embryo is about 200 cells because that's an egg that's been fertilized and then is starting to grow for the first 5 days of development. Because an egg is a single cell, it can be really tricky to freeze and thaw. Not every egg we freeze may thaw successfully. So we have about an 85% thaw rate with the eggs that we freeze. So if we freeze 10 eggs, maybe we only have 8 that are usable. So there's a little attrition rate up front. The other downside about freezing eggs is, like we talked about, not all those eggs are going to have the right number of chromosomes in them. And there's no way for us to know that by looking at them. The only way to know is by seeing how they develop into embryos. So there's a lot more that we don't know about eggs when we freeze them. And we know we're going to take a little hit when we go to thaw them, but we're preserving that reproductive autonomy to be able to choose that sperm source later when we're ready. If all else is equal and you know the sperm source that you want to use and you're just not ready, sometimes making embryos makes more sense because we're able to see how many of those eggs are able to turn into embryos or kind of run them through a little bit of that obstacle course to put them to the test and see which ones have the right chromosomes to at least make it through the early part of embryo development. And then if we freeze embryos, those embryos, like I said, are like 1 or 200 cells, those are much more likely to survive the thaw process. We have like, you know, well over a 90% freeze thaw rate for those. So it's a little bit of a trade-off.
How important is routine blood work for women to have as an indicator to fertility issues?
There isn't really much routine lab work that would give a lot of insight into fertility. So there's some blood work that we can do to get an idea of kind of the egg count or the ovarian reserve that we do. And there's a test called AMH or anti-Müllerian hormone. That can help give us an idea of how many eggs we would have access to if we were to do something like IVF or egg freezing, the quantity side of things. But in all reality, that's not really a fantastic marker of natural fertility, because regardless of how many you have available inside your ovary, most women are just going to ovulate one each month, regardless of kind of what the overall pool is. You know, I kind of go back and forth, and a lot of people in the field go back and forth about how useful doing AMH screening for otherwise healthy young people that, you know, may not be ready to start a family yet in terms of the counseling that would go along with that. But I think, again, as long as women are getting normal cycles, if they are ready to try to get pregnant, the best thing to do is to try.
Are you taking new patients?
I am.
If someone wants to make an appointment with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way for them to do that is to give the Shady Grove New Patient Center a call. Set up an appointment whenever it's convenient for you. I see patients primarily in the Center City location, but we have virtual options as well for wherever you are.
If you could give one bit of advice to our listeners, what would you say to them? It could be about anything. It doesn't have to be about fertility.
Well, now that I'm in a fertility mindset,
right, okay.
I would say just be mindful. I think understanding the impact of age on fertility is really important. And I think that so often that's something that's glazed over because it's not talked about as much as I feel like it should be. And it's all about family planning for the complete family. So it's really thinking about what is the last child that you want to have to really make your family complete, and working around a timeline where you would be able to conceive kind of that final child within a reasonable time span and age.
Dr. Hutchinson, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you so much for including me.
For more information about Shady Grove Fertility or to make an appointment with Dr. Ann Hutchinson, you can go to shadygrovefertility.com. And if you missed any part of this interview, it will be available as a podcast tomorrow morning on our website, 957benfm.com. Thanks so much for joining me again today. I'm Kathy Romano. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.